Hi, name Alexander Trester, date July 16, 2021, age, I can't count that high, but it's 62, I think. Location, Earth. Name of my associate and partner in crime is Susan Lust, with whom I'll be speaking in a moment.
Okay, my name is Susan Lust. Today is July 16th. I'm older too, 68 to be exact. I'm in Rockland County, New York, and I met Alex a couple of years ago over the internet. And that's the first question, okay? How did I meet you? I met you because I was starting to teach dance and movement to people with Parkinson's disease, and I was looking for people who also did the same thing. And I was looking for other teachers. And what was very funny is why I wanted to reach out to you, Alex, is because I saw a video of you washing your dog, a schnauzer. And it was the most, I'm an animal lover. And when I saw you giving a bath to your schnauzer, I thought, I have to meet this guy. And I thought, he has Parkinson's, he's washing his dog in the bathtub, and he gets in the bathtub with his dog to wash it. So I thought he has a great sense of humor, and I want to get to know him. And that's I called you, or I reached out to you, or I emailed you or something. So thankfully, thanks to...
It's ridiculous because that's the most popular video that I have on YouTube, and I put it there for no reason whatsoever. I don't even know why I did it. It must have been so hot in New York and I was so bored that I recorded it. And sure, lo and behold, now we're helping people with Parkinson's.
Right, exactly.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So where were you born?
In Moscow, Soviet Russia, 1959, went to boarding school, traveled before that with the circus with my mom, who was a juggler. And in Soviet Union, you have to have education, whether your parents want it or not. I couldn't travel with my mom. I would love to travel with my mom all those years more, but I had to be in school and get my, you know, red-inspired education. And then prior to graduation, they decided to bolt to America. So we ended up in New York in 1976, bicentennial year. And that started the whole craziness, you know, life started all over again for me at the age of 16.
So you came here not speaking English at all?
Not really. I started teaching. I started learning English in Rome when we were waiting our visa to get to the United States. And I had an incredible teacher who had probably one of the biggest impacts on me of all the disciplines I've ever learned. This man taught me how to speak English in 3 months.
Wow. Why do you think he had such a great impact?
Well, because compared to our very strict and regimented Soviet education, he brought in a guitar. We sang Beatles songs. We talked. He never allowed dictionaries. It was a free-for-all exchange of just energies, and that translated into being able to speak English. I don't know how he did it, but when we landed at JFK, I was able to converse with the cab driver. I could tell him where we needed to go. In other words, I was having a conversation. I had 8 years of French and I couldn't formulate a sentence.
That is amazing. You know, and while you're telling me about that, I'm realizing you had this great Italian teacher teaching you English, and the way he did it, sometimes I think that's the way you're a teacher, because you bring in so many different aspects to movement. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, because I don't want people to ever worry about what I'm going to do next as the teacher. I want them to be joyful about what we're doing this very second. In other words, if you remove the worry of having to memorize, having to, you know, listen to dictations, or teacher becomes the focal point of everything that's going on. No, it's about the students And all I'm doing is just inspiring the best I can. That's all my job is to inspire, provide good content, and just be joyful with them. And if I can do that, it's a success.
That reminds me of one of your other videos that I think is stellar, and that is the one about gait and walking and using a tennis ball. You want to explain that a little bit?
Well, Parkinson's is something that takes so much focus, and it takes focus away from our lives. And if you can redirect that pathway, the damaged nerve pathway that doesn't reach our legs, that doesn't reach our arms, and refocus it. So if you put a tennis ball in your hand and you just squeeze that hand, all of a sudden Parkinson's has no place to go because it's not focusing on the affected arm or a leg or a neck, or, you know, because it affects so many different parts of the body. So once you redirect that signal, you can achieve incredible results. You can walk normally. You can get rid of that lag in your leg, so your gait is improved. And it's just simple things like that. And I've been working on it now for a while. And there are ways that you can make Parkinson's just go away for a period of time. And it's a great thing.
I think that's why everybody loves you as a teacher, because you're experiencing it yourself.
Well,
do you want to share any of your experiences with some of your students and how you're connecting with them?
Well, I tell them exactly what they should expect and how you can work around it. Today, I talked to my students about downtime, when the pills start wearing down and you go through this lag where you become slow, things slow down. It's like walking through pea soup, you know, it's like slush. But the thing is, you don't have to have downtime because we have medications to help us. You just have to take it on time. Take it with the right food or no food, and be prepared, you know, to exercise and do all the right things you have to do throughout the day, so your downtime can be reduced to almost nothing. I hardly have a downtime, and I've had Parkinson's now for at least since the diagnosis for 16 years.
That's pretty amazing. Is that because you're on schedule?
Oh, of course. I don't do anything without a schedule. You know, I'm like the KGB, you know. I have to get up on time, I have to spy on the rest of the world, I have to deliver everything to Putin, and then I can go to sleep.
That's funny. Okay, wait a second. So you have, talk about medication. You didn't just arrive there and ta-da, it was perfect. You went through a whole process of getting to this place. You want to tell us a little bit about that past experience with the wrong medication?
The problem with the disease and the doctor's approach to it is that they throw medications at you in rapid succession. The moment you start feeling worse, and it's a progressive disease, so you know you're supposed to start feeling worse and worse and worse, and you become like a test bed. You know, try this medication, try that medication. And of course, all of them have a litany of side effects, mile long, which you're not going to go through because, first of all, nobody can read the small script at all. It's too small. You know, you have to, you can cure Parkinson's, but then you'll be blind. You know, if you read those small print of all those medications. So I don't know anybody who reads all of them. But then a few months later, you find out that you've lost $20,000 by creating a bicycle store in your living room, or you're standing naked in Atlantic City because you just lost all your savings on the slot machine. And all of that is written in side effects. But you didn't know any of that. I didn't know any of that. And I've experienced.
Wait, which happened to you? Which happened
the
to
bicycle
you, the
store.
Standing
I was. No, I was trying to invent the best bicycle known to man because I couldn't walk very well, so I had to get around on a bicycle, and they wouldn't let me take a bicycle anywhere, so I had to find a folding bicycle. Then I had to find a bag to hide the folding bicycle so I can take it with me. And this is what happens, because I would tell people, you know, this is my wheelchair because I have Parkinson's. They said, get the out of here. Wheelchair. Wheelchair has four wheels. I said, well, my wheelchair has two wheels and they're in line. It's called a bicycle, but it's helping me. Nobody would even listen to me. And I lived in Manhattan. You can't bring a bicycle into any office in Manhattan. And they don't care whether you walk with a limp, whether you have Parkinson's or Alzheimer's, they just don't care.
So were you obsessed with this, would you say?
Well, I only found out when I finally had an inkling to realize that I'm doing something really, really wrong. Something is not me anymore. You know, I did find the perfect bicycle. I found five of them. So I had to give them away to my friends because what the heck am I going to do with all of them? So my credit card swelled up and I thought, no, this is not right. This is not me. So I asked, and finally doctor said, oh yeah, it's called extreme hobbyism. I said, you know, you could have told me that a year ago. So
you spent $20,000 on bicycles and you filled up your living room with tons of bicycles for a year before you asked your doctor?
Mm-hmm. I thought I was just, you know, I was trying to find the right bicycle for me. And the folding bicycle seemed like something that circus people ride. You know, it didn't seem like anything that a normal adult would ride. But finally, I realized they're so well made and so, you know, actually helpful. So I just started fooling the system. I would put my bicycle in the bag and I could go anywhere.
So what did your doctor say when you told him this?
Oh, God. You know, it's not much, really. She said, you sure you don't want to take this medication? I said, it's driving me nuts. How can I keep taking this medication? I'm a lunatic. And then I just stopped. I just stopped and never took it again.
What about the bicycle?
Well, my friends loved them. You know, I kept the best couple of bikes that I had and I ride them and I love them. And, you know, it certainly saved my life from not having to walk everywhere, because it is difficult with Parkinson's, the walking.
Mm-hmm. Well, at least your obsession was with bicycles. It's not such a, it's kind of a positive thing as opposed to a negative thing.
Yeah, because the good thing was I you know, I was riding it fully closed. So, you know, because the next step would be riding it naked and there would be a whole other conversation. I've seen those people in New York too. You're laughing. I've seen people in Central Park riding around naked. They probably have Parkinson's.
Oh no. Oh boy.
Yeah.
Okay, so who had the biggest influence on you in your life?
Well, it has to be my mom, because she was not only just the most incredible person as far as humor, and she had a gift of life. She was very good looking. I knew that from an early age. So I had my biological father until I was 2.5 or 3. Then I had my first stepfather from 3 to 10. And then I had my second stepfather, whom we left Russia with, who was a star in the Bolshoi Theater in Moscow, ballet dancer. And so I say she gave me 3 incredible fathers. And she loved all of them, and they loved her. And I knew it. I could see it. And her sense of humor, her just love of life, and just an incredible woman.
You think your sense of humor helps you with Parkinson's?
Oh, I think it helps me with everything. I used to think that I'm just like to joke around because I don't want people to know that I'm actually lost in America at first, you know, because it was such a volatile period to land in America at the age of 16, barely speaking English and trying to make sense of what to do, where you are, where do you go? And nobody actually tells you anything because everybody has this freedom to express as long as it's not something specific.
I didn't get that.
Well, because, you know, people are just so happy to be in your company. Nobody sits you down and say, look, you're 16 years old. You just arrived from communist country. This is capitalism. You should learn a thing or two about where you are and what you're going to do and some of the things to look out for. I never had that conversation. So everything I learned from enrolling into a ballet school and making friends. And I did it only because I was so afraid.
Yeah. How did you get into your, how did you become a dancer?
Well, it's part lunacy, part idiocy, because I mean, my stepfather, second stepfather, is a prominent ballet master who got a job with New York City Ballet in school and the company. So we didn't have to worry about money, which was a, you know, there's a lottery to be won after arriving in America. That's one. That's lottery number one. We were set. And I had to chaperone him because he really didn't speak English. I had to make sure he gets to school on time to teach and we get home on time. So, and I realized that how long can I possibly do this? Because it doesn't look like this man was going to ever learn how to speak English or be able to travel by himself, you know. And it's understandable because when you spend your lifetime in Soviet Union where the party and the people are one and everything is provided for you in minimum amounts by the government, you don't have to think. And
he was a ballet master in Moscow.
Yes, well, he was a dancer in Moscow, but when we left, he switched to teaching. And he was the best ballet teacher I've ever seen, known. So when I said I want to start taking ballet classes, I've never danced in my life. I was hockey and a soccer player. I never studied. I watched ballet because there was nothing else on TV and the girls were cute.
I heard you say once that you have a long torso and short legs.
Yeah, I'm totally not built for ballet. I'm an athlete, but not a ballet dancer. I mean, and he said very honestly to me, my stepdad, Andre, he said, you know, you're crazy because, first of all, people start at the age of 5, 7, maybe. The boys start a little later than the girls. You have to have certain facilities like long legs and, you know, right feet and physical categories that don't apply to normal people. I mean, you almost have to be superhuman. And I had none of those. I had musicality and I had incredible coordination. And somehow he said, well, if you want to dance, I have to teach you in the living room because nobody's going to look at you in a ballet school. And he transformed me in several months, you know, that I was able to get into school. And a year and a half later, I landed a job in the Swedish Ballet Company.
Wow.
I know, so it sounds like a fantasy. Home? Yes.
He taught you at home in the living room?
Yes.
Wow. He must have been amazing.
Oh, he was beyond amazing. He was a magician. He was Herr Drosselmeyer, who transformed a wooden doll into somebody who dances.
Wow. So then you love dancing. Is that you fell in love with it or what?
I love the fact that I made friends, that I was able to communicate, that I was out of Queens where we were living for the first year and a half. I found us a beautiful apartment in Manhattan. I loved all that. And everything else was really not that important. Of course, I wanted to become a good dancer. Everybody did in that school. It's the biggest school in America, the most famous one of all. And but it was my need and longing to be with a bunch of kids my age. You know, the problem was is that in Russia, I had 9 years of boarding school, so I was used to a company of friends. And in America, all of a sudden, I know no one. So that craziness of my thinking, which started, well, look at these people, the boys, the girls, they're laughing, they're happy. I didn't even think that ballet was difficult or that I was wrong for it. I just wanted to belong.
Wow. Yeah. So it was wanting to make a connection.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you're a beautiful dancer. I mean, it's either you have natural ability or your stepfather was an amazing teacher. He
I
is.
think it's a bit of both. I was born with a crazy ability to mimic whatever steps I see. I could pick up a tennis racket and play as if I played my whole life and it would be my first game. It's just
Wow.
something in your brain happens where you have this coordination. And I use it to this day to fool Parkinson's, because the moment Parkinson starts to screw around with me, I tell it to go itself. Because I
So,
know the way around the neural pathways, how to navigate it.
how would you say, and that's why you're a great teacher, because you're able to share that with other people.
Well, it's a gift. I have to say, it's a gift that I finally was able to explore it to its full potential, because if I never gotten Parkinson's, I wouldn't even know it. It would never cross my mind. And to me, it's a chess game between me and Parkinson's.
So what happens? Give me an example of what happens if the Parkinson's creeps in, and then what do you do as a dancer to talk back at
Well,
it?
during class, when I teach all these classes now during the week, I could have side effects of Parkinson's, the tremors, the slowness, imbalance. But the thing is, if you, and I keep saying that in class, make sure your fingers have all the energy you can give it. In other words, don't collapse your hands, but push through it, because the action of having to sustain this very tight feel with your fingers gets rid of the tremor immediately. And you wouldn't know
Wow.
it unless you actually came up with it and studied it, which I did. I kept looking at my body and seeing, why is my right leg slower? Why is my tremor so pronounced? And then all of a sudden, if I think about it, it disappears. Or if I tighten my hand, the tremor goes away. And so all these things, you accumulate this knowledge, but then you have to distill it into what would work for a group of people you never met. So the class that I
Now,
teach is, yeah.
no, go on, the class that you
No,
teach.
I'm saying the class that I teach is a combination of what really is needed for a person with Parkinson's to reactivate the body, to wake up the muscle groups that have been dormant. I mean, most people with Parkinson's, they will have neuropathy, atrophy, and all these things only because they think it's an inevitable part of Parkinson's progression. What they fail to understand is that if you use those muscle groups, if you force yourself to use those muscle groups, they don't have to lay dormant. They don't have to be inactive. It's right there. If you do a series of squats, your legs will move. If you shoot your fingers instead of this slowly moving, so sort of like watching somebody in slow-mo, that will not help. You have to force the signal to get to where it's supposed to go. And by signal, I mean nerve signal.
Well, that is amazing because you have to think like a dancer. With Parkinson's, you almost have to think like a dancer, and you have that skill. But it's very hard for people who don't have that background. You're blessed to have that, I think.
Well, this is why I try so hard to impart it on as many people as possible. There are ways to dealing with Parkinson's, because you don't have to be debilitated by it to the point where you just lost all interest in life and you just basically like a vegetable, unfortunately.
So I
But
want to
most
know
people,
how
you.
has your.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, you go. I'm listening.
I was going to say, how do you think your life has changed for the better because of Parkinson's?
Well, it's hard to ne neglect the fact that this purpose landed on my lap through these weird circumstances. I don't want Parkinson's, for God's sakes, nobody does. But what it did, it actually taught me that there's so much more I can do to make my life complete. I don't want to be reduced to, basically a person who's just imploded onto himself Because Parkinson's, that's what it is. It's like a gigantic implosion where everything collapses little by little. So I'm fighting it any way I can. And it's given me a new lease on life. I see life now as as something that's a lot more disciplined, that has to be a lot more disciplined than it would be otherwise. I would just be middle-aged ballet master. I have a Russian accent. I walk into the studio, everybody thinks it's really cute. I teach a great good ballet class. I haven't had many complaints. And that would be it. And then I would get old and that would be the end. But now I have to fight this thing tooth and nail because it's going to get me if I'm not careful. And I've lost weight, I've gotten much stronger. Sometimes you have to feel good in order, sometimes you have to get sick in order to feel good. And that's what I say every day. This is not a end all, this is a challenge. Parkinson's is just a challenge.
Oh wow, Alex, it's amazing. It is amazing because you know what? It gave your yeah, you could have been some ballet master at Steps in New York City, getting a big fat belly, drinking alcohol, helping people and them all thinking you're a great teacher. But you just I'm sorry that you have to have Parkinson's to find this, but it gave you a purpose that's very, very, that's a gift.
Well, because a lot of this information was missing from the doctors. And I'm not blaming the doctors, I'm not criticizing the doctors, but it's different when you live with Parkinson's or when you try to help somebody when you don't have Parkinson's. It's really difficult because it's such a fickle disease. But when you're in it and you have an understanding that you can actually help other people, this is a pretty powerful position to be in. And I don't put myself in the forefront of knowledge that I have something magical. There's nothing magical about it. It's hard work and discipline. That's it.
It's a right. Yeah, it's a lot of discipline.
That's it. And most
I'm
people just
very,
simply don't have
very
it.
well, that's actually a very big subject, which is motivation. And because Parkinson's disease can affects the whole motivation and desire and it develop and people get apathetic about doing things, you're saying the opposite, that we have to teach discipline, like a
Well,
dancer is disciplined.
that's the first thing I tell people when they want to work with me one-on-one, because the best results people can get is when they work with me one-on-one, because I can focus exactly on what's going on physically and try to help them. But discipline is such an elusive thing that most people are disciplined for about a week, 2 weeks, maybe three, and then it's just too much. I can't get up and work out. I mean, I'm too tired. The moment you do that, you're done. You're lost. And you lost your battle. And sure, you can take more and more pills, but the end result of that is quite tragic.
We're living in a society that's very pill oriented. Just take me to my doctor, give me a pill. I just want a pill to heal me, and that's it. But people, this disease is about work and it is about discipline.
There's nothing else available to us. And what are we talking about? Right food, right exercise, stress reduction, and good sleep. I mean, we're not talking anything magical here, but there's a huge spectrum of what can and you can and cannot do, what you should and shouldn't eat. And that's a whole other story, probably for another interview.
But the thing is that you can change your life and it could be fun. We're gonna you and I are going to do a new program called The Music That Moves You, right? This
Right.
is about bringing music back into your life. A lot of people who are in who have Parkinson's are in their 60s and 70s. They used to dance. They used to partner dance. They used to dance with their boyfriend, girlfriend, wives. I remember my parents. I learned a lot of the cha-cha, bossa, you know, samba, all that stuff from my parents. I mean, they had fun. Got to bring fun back into their lives. They don't have to stop. It's like, remember we did that webinar, Music as Medicine. Some of the people thought, oh, I can never play the guitar again, or I can never dance again. But you can.
Yes, you can. And you know what's a very rewarding part of this, that now that I've been out there doing occasional seminars and lectures, I meet people like you. Ordinary people who just decided they're going to help people with Parkinson's. It's like somebody touched you from the above and said, you are chosen to help people with Parkinson's. And I always wonder why.
Exactly.
Because I understand why I do it, because I don't want it. But to wake up one day and decide that that's going to be your career path, or out of good nature. I mean, you came to me. And to this day, I'm wondering, okay, I'm so glad to be helping all the groups that you're leading and people you're in contact with. But I see it as a gift. It truly is a gift to meet people like you.
Well, I have no idea like somebody came down and touched me and said, you help people with Parkinson's. That was about 12 years ago, and I'm a dancer. I studied with Merce Cunningham, and I was a scholarship student with Merce Cunningham, but I never got into his company. I don't think I ever told you, Alice, because I was 5 feet tall, as opposed to all the other women who he hired who were 6 feet tall. So I was like the 1 5-foot woman in the scholarship program, and he took all those women into the company and not me. But anyway, I got over it. But so I was performing with a group of women here in our community to other housebound, not well people. And one of the women was in a wheelchair. I don't know if I ever told you this. And she said, come here, I want your phone number and I want you to call me after I had performed for her. And after that, I called her. I didn't know what was wrong with her, and I found out she had Parkinson's disease. And we became fast and furious friends. And after that, after the first time I met her, I came home and I Googled Parkinson's and dance because I thought, this is a movement disorder disease. It has to be connected to. And I can't stop moving. Like people just, you know, just if I am so connected to moving that if I see somebody that has a hard time moving, I just want to help them figure out how they can do better. So I found David Leventhal and the Marc Morris Dance Company and Dance for PD. And this was in 2010, I think it was, or 2009. And he was a very small group at the time. Now they're international. And I spoke to him on the phone, and he was having a training for dancers to teach people with Parkinson's disease. And he said, well, I'm sorry, we have one of these a year, but it's all filled up, so I'll call you next year when we have the next teaching. So I said, okay. I was a bit upset, but he called me the next day. He said, somebody canceled, you're in, because the next person on the list
Wow.
lived in California. So the next day I was in the program, and I haven't stopped teaching people with Parkinson's since then, and that was about 12 years ago. Because I also am so inspired because I see what movement does for everybody. It gives them life, it inspires them, it motivates them, it makes them happy. There are so many people that have come to us and said, don't tell anybody about Parkinson's. I don't want anybody to know. I don't want anybody to feel sorry for me. And then they come to our classes and they start feeling good about themselves, and then they want to share their stories with people. So this movement and dance really inspires people.
Well, great. Great. Good to know you.
It's good to know you too. Yeah, you know, did you know that story about me? No.
I think you told me part of it at some point.
What do I want to ask you?
Okay.
I want to
How are
know
we doing on
when
time?
did you get married? What I want to know when you got married.
Well, I don't publicize anything about my personal life on any kind of media, not my kid, not my wife. A couple of years ago, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, something like that.
Well, I want to say that, can I say that your daughter is a big star in our Zoom classes, because the classes that Alex teaches to a lot of men who are probably in their 60s and 70s, who are all grandfathers, swoon at Alex's baby, who is now 1 year old and is the most beautiful baby in the whole wide world. And she's in the classes with him. She's like he's doing leg lifts and she's on his leg, or he's doing arm lifts and he's carrying her. I mean, we actually, can I tell them about one the webinar that we did where you danced with her?
Oh, yeah.
That was beautiful. We did a webinar called Music as Medicine, and one of the dances that Alex did was to a waltz, like a lullaby. What was that piece of music? I forget. It was a waltz, right? It was a waltz. So he took his daughter and just did a beautiful partnering dance with his daughter, and everybody just swooned, and it was gorgeous. So
Yeah, she's a character.
that is something. I think that is something that is you know, let's talk about your positive thinking, because I think your mindset and the way you think positively has a lot to do with this too.
Well, what's the option? Wail in the negativity? I mean, succumb to the progressive disorder?
Yes, plenty of
Blame
people do
ever
that.
blame well, everything and everyone you have ever met that somehow they gave you Parkinson's. I mean, if you spend your life doing that, it's not much of a life. I just don't even think about it. I think, what do I have to do today to feel good? What can I do today to help other people? Maybe find something new, maybe discover something that people haven't thought of. And it's all geared towards survival. If you know, people say to me, "Oh, you're such an inspiration." And I always have to correct them. I say, "No, you're looking at a desperation. You can see it if you look close enough. I'm desperately trying to stay viable, strong, cognitive. So I'm not like drooling at a corner of my mouth and, in decrepit, because that's just not going to happen. So it's desperation that's driving me forward, and I use positivity and humor to propel that state, that message, because the opposite of happiness is something I don't even want to look at or think.
When you work one-on-one with people, how do you motivate them to get to that place where you're conceptually thinking like that?
Well, I think I present myself as an example of what you can achieve with Parkinson's with having Parkinson's, and then I try to zero in on what could help this particular individual, and that is not easy to do because there's so many areas that have been affected by Parkinson's. It's not just right arm or left leg or your whole body is taking a beating, and to pinpoint how I can help this person is a really difficult task. So it's a real challenge, but I like the challenge. I love working with people one on one, and when I see that they're getting good results and their life is changing for the better, that's all the reward I ever need. I mean, this is, to me, it's everything.
What advice would you give someone who is newly diagnosed with Parkinson's?
To treat as a challenge, to be prepared to work hard and not to dwell on the side effects, on how long is it going to progress, how am I going to feel in 10 years? Nobody knows. You can't answer those questions. Doctors can't. I can't. Nobody can. Should I get a brain stimulation operation? Nobody knows. It's such a complicated procedure. And it helps some extreme cases, and people do feel better, and it is working for some people, but not all people. And I caution, because I was told many years ago that I should get a deep brain stimulation, and I asked why, because they said, well, you probably don't want to get to the state where you can no longer think for yourself. But, you know, that's a kind of a dubious notion, because doctors don't know that. You know, there's a great deal of mystery as to how it will progress. And then everybody progresses on an individual level. So how can you tell that you should get a DBS? Because maybe 10 years from now, your decline will be such that you won't be able to think.
You have been, I'm sure you're in a very good place right now, but I'm sure you've been obviously in a worse place, and you see how you can improve. So, you know,
well,
there's change.
Yeah. Yeah, people may not achieve the same results as I have, but at least I can point them in a direction where they can try.
Yeah. You know, last question, and I don't know if you wanted me to ask this, but I don't like this question, but you tell me, how would you like to be remembered?
I just don't want to be forgotten. it's like Woody Allen says, I don't want to be remembered for my work. I want to be remembered for not dying. So how would you like your legacy? You know, my legacy is that I don't want to remember for my work. I want to remember by not dying. So I'm paraphrasing, but it's something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, this is very nice. This is wonderful. I enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Amy.